We'd like to thank Dr. Mark Burnett for coming and joining us here today on the MHP podcast to discuss cementless total knees with us. Dr. Burnett is a physician who hails from Johnson City, did undergrad at East Tennessee State University, and then went to medical school at the University of Virginia, Wahoo, and undid his residency at Wake Forest and has been in the Asheville area since 2009. Welcome, Dr. Burnett.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. Yeah, that's all true. I've been here in Asheville since 2009. I'm an orthopedic surgeon. I currently practice at Carolina Hand and Sports Medicine, which is probably a little bit of a misnomer because I only do hip and knee arthroplasty for my career, but this practice is a good fit for me. I moved over here a little over three years ago to practice with these guys. But I've been doing hip and knee replacements here in Asheville since 2009, and that's been my primary focus to the point that over the last, I want to say 13 or 14 years, that's 100% of what I do are just hip and knee replacements, and probably pretty close to 50% hips and 50% knees.
So you're here to discuss with us about the cementless total knee arthroplasty technology and what makes this different than the traditional total knee arthroplasty.
Yeah, cementless technology has been around for quite a while, and it was, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, there were some designs by different companies to utilize that technology where the idea is that the bone somehow attaches to the metal rather than just kind of gluing the prosthesis into the bone itself. And some of those older designs just didn't have the right technology to really be successful, so they kind of got a bad reputation as failing early or not being a very successful surgery. But then over the years, the materials have gotten better and some of the implants have gotten better, primarily utilizing 3D printed titanium. So the metal is almost like a metallic sponge. So it has the architecture of normal bone, so it can allow the bone to grow into it more readily than some of those older designs. And that's really opened up the possibility to use implants without cement. And cementless implants are also very popular in things like hip replacements. I mean, since I've been here in 09, all of my hip replacements have been cementless. I mean, the bone grows into the metal. We think that's a much more permanent attachment. There is, I think, more longevity with the prosthesis. It's integrated into the patient, so I think they can feel more natural to people. So as orthopedic surgeons doing hip and knee replacements, we're very familiar with using cementless technology with our hips. So it just kind of came into the knee market more recently and has gained a lot of popularity since then. I started doing it back in 2014. I actually got taken to a company called Stryker that manufactures a lot of implants. And I was going to New York to visit, and the Stryker rep said, hey, we could pay for your trip if you let us take you up to our plant. And they were wanting to try to sell me on hip replacements because I had a lot of hip business and they would like to have had my business. And there was one little breakout session in the meeting at lunch, and they showed me this new PressFit knee system they were coming out with. And it was just sort of like a lunchtime meeting that they didn't think I was very interested in, but it was just sort of for them to show a new product to a surgeon just to kind of get my reaction. And I came away from the meeting not caring anything about their hip replacements, but really interested in their technology for the knees. And ultimately kind of followed up with that with the company and tried to figure out ways that I could do it here. And there was a slight increased cost to the implant back then, so I ended up convincing the hospital to help us out to be part of a multi-center trial with Stryker to look at the PressFit knees. And that way Mission Hospital could earn some income from the research side of things to offset the cost of the implants. So we entered into that back in 2014 and started this multi-center trial. And as we enrolled patients initially, there were some pretty strict criteria that patients had to be younger than 75. They couldn't have inflammatory arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis. They couldn't be obese. I think the BMI cutoff was 40, if I remember correctly. So a little bit more strict criteria, but allow us to kind of get in here and start doing these procedures. And I really felt like it did a much better job. I wanted to do it for all my patients to the point that by the time it got the study had concluded, they wanted you to also then go back and do a separate subset of patients cemented with the same prosthesis. And I don't think I ever did a single one of those cases because I liked the cementless one so good. I never really wanted to go back. I felt like it wasn't right to go back and glue things in on patients when I've been doing so well for, more than a year as part of this research study with the cementless technology. So that's kind of where it all started back in 2014, and how we were able to kind of get it into Mission Hospital to be able to do it. And then since then, because of the success of it, it's become more commonplace. But it's an interesting concept because to me, the idea of traditional total knees that are glued in is a little bit of a crazy idea. And I think that orthopedic surgeons generally probably have a little bit, maybe too much faith in the success of cementing things into bone. And we were all trained to do that, and we're told that they do well, and they have high success rates. If you look at studies of failures, there's not a lot of failures of the knee replacements early. But I also think that we all recognize there is this statistic that somewhere around 15 to 20% of people that get total knee replacements are not completely happy with their total knee replacement. So it may not be a complete failure, but I don't think that the traditional cemented knee replacements were doing great, and I don't think we really understood why that was. And I believe at least part of that may be because perhaps those cemented total knee replacements aren't as well connected to patients as we had hoped that they would be. And maybe that was some of the source of pain or dysfunction. But there aren't great diagnostic tools to figure that out. So you're just left with, well, that patient's had continued pain and we don't know why, and we just chalk it up to that statistic. To me, if you think about cement, that a lot of people don't understand how it works or what it is, but it's a powder and a liquid that you mix together, and after you mix it, it sort of had the consistency of like cake icing would be how I'd probably best describe it. And then in about a 15 to 18 minute period, that cake icing turns into something that's hard as a rock. So the idea is you stir it and you get in this icing type consistency, and you get the bone prepared and cleaned and dried. And you push the cement into the bone, you put the cement on the back of the metal, you squeeze the two things together, you hope that the cement goes down into the little pores in the bone, and then it has to hold perfectly still until it hardens. And then once it hardens down in those little pores of the bone, it's in theory has attached the metal to the bone with a very, permanent type of fixation. I think some of the problems are that cement goes from that cake icing consistency to a rock over a very short period of time. And there's a ton of variables that can affect the rate at which it does that. And it's things like the temperature in the room, the humidity in the room, how long your scrub tech stirs it for, how fast they stir it, whether there's vacuum connected to it, whether that vacuum tubing actually worked, because sometimes it doesn't or someone doesn't know how to connect it. How long it takes the surgeon to then get it out of the bowl onto the metal and into the patient. Once you get it into the patient, everybody's porosity in their bone is different. A man's is much different than an osteoporotic woman. So obviously that man's bone may look like a countertop with no little pores in it, so nothing to really get down into. So once you even get through all that, then you put the implant in, and once you squeeze it and compress it, it cannot move. If you think about it, if you pull it back just a tiny little bit, there's little air bubbles will get in between that cement mantle, which will disrupt the bond. So you got to put all these parts in a person where there's blood and other fluids, and you already know that this stuff is setting up and getting harder as time goes on. And the first part, maybe it's like cake icing, and maybe the second part you're trying to cement and it's like Play-Doh. It's just there's so many variables that we can't control that I think that we're probably fooling ourselves that that works 100% of the time. So that's kind of my idea on cement of, well, is it the best fixation to attach the metal to the bone or not? And the idea of the press fit technology is once you put it into the bone is alive and the bone can grow to the metal. And that process, once it occurs, is very permanent, and you're just relying on biology to kind of bail out the shortcomings of the cement. And that's where I've found it just to be a overall a better way of attaching it to folk. And I think we showed that in our multi-center trial with Stryker, that our failure rates were comparable or better than the cemented technology. But then we also found that our functional scores and our pain scores and all these other measures of how patients actually do were better in the cementless group than the cemented group. So that's where I kind of really became a believer, and I honestly think it has been the biggest change in knee replacements, in my career since I've been here in 16 years. I think it's the thing that's made the biggest impact and the biggest change to patients is switching from cement to not cement.
And I was reading that for some patients, it can be even an outpatient procedure.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that's true also of all knee replacements in today's world. That really it was gaining a lot of popularity before COVID, and then after COVID, no one wanted to be in a hospital. So it really jump started this idea of outpatient surgery and people going home the same day. And there has always been this concern, well, if you don't use the glue and it's just pressed into the bone, can people put full weight on it? Can people still resume their activities? Are they going to somehow knock it loose? And the answer is they can rehab that knee in the exact same manner that the cemented ones are rehabbed. You can be full weight bearing immediately. You have full range of motion immediately. These materials are unbelievable when you put them in, and it is very rigid, that fixation, even before the bone grows to it. I mean, it is stuck into that patient very tightly. So I let people fully weight bear, fully resume physical therapy, work on the range of motion as fast as they can. So it lends itself well to do in an outpatient surgery center where we have not seen any increased pain compared to the cemented version. I think the patients do very well. And one benefit that's sort of a side note, the when you cement, you typically want the bone to be very dry. You kind of want all that fatty, bloody mixture off of the bone. So surgeons typically use a tourniquet to achieve that because the bone is constantly bleeding during the surgery. So most surgeons are inflating a tourniquet at least for cementing, if not for the entire surgery. But when you aren't using cement, you don't really care about that with the bone. So it's also allowed me to stop using tourniquets for my knee replacements. And I think that also lends itself well to outpatient surgery or same-day surgery, because if you don't use a tourniquet, there is less damage to the muscle or potentially the nerves because that tourniquet is very constricting. It's a blood pressure cuff that's inflated to much higher than the arm cuffs that we use in the office to measure a blood pressure. We typically inflate the surgical ones to 250 or 300 millimeters of mercury and leave it up for an extended period of time. So you can imagine, blood pressure cuff on your arm goes up to maybe 180, 200 to measure, maybe 225, and that's really uncomfortable. But you're talking about something even tighter than that and leaving it up for potentially an hour. I mean, it has to cause some sort of problems, I would think, with the muscles or nerves. But also, if you don't use a tourniquet, if something bleeds during surgery, you can stop it because you see it bleeding and you can stop it immediately. So I think overall, patients get a lot less bleeding, bruising, blood loss, and things like that, which has also been an advantage when you're trying to send people home the same day. You worry less about, blood loss or anemia or, having a big bloody effusion, the knee filled up with blood and things like that. So I think those have been another sort of an improvement that's indirectly related to not using the cement.
And what is the general lifespan of a cementless total knee, or the total knee in general?
Yeah, I think that there's no one really knows the answer to that. I think most orthopedic surgeons are probably telling people the neighborhood of 25 to 30 years. I do think when you switch from cemented to cementless, what's going to fail may be different. I think with the cemented knees, that bond between the bone and the cement is the most likely thing to fail. I think that's what we typically are seeing. However, if that bond now is bone growing into metal and that is permanent, it's going to put the stress or the weak link in the system is likely going to be the plastic. So, we don't know yet because we really haven't been doing this long enough to see those failures because the plastic is very good in today's world. They're manufactured to last a very long time. But I anticipate that in the future, what we're going to see more of are the plastic, inserts wearing out before the metal parts, which hopefully, though, will make revision surgery easier. I mean, hopefully, then you could, could envision a situation where if the plastic is all that's failing and the bone metal, where the bone has grown to that metal, that interface is still good, you could just replace that plastic part and it could be a less extensive revision surgery if the patient needed it down the road. But I think that'll be sort of time will tell. I think that will be long down the road.
Would there be any reason why someone wouldn't be able to get a cementless total knee?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. And I think that's something that, as we're doing this more and more and it's becoming more common, we're learning more about, every day or every year. When I first started this in 2014, there were some pretty strict criteria, as I mentioned, as far as age and rheumatoid arthritis and BMI and things like that. And I think that's we were wanting to get a good, group of patients that were healthier and younger just to, ensure that the thing worked and not really push the limits. In today's world with me, and I have quite a bit of experience doing this since 2014, I'm going to estimate that I've done 2,500 to 3,000 of these surgeries. I'm a lot more aggressive and a lot more confident in who I can do it in. So I don't usually take anyone to the operating room and say, oh, we need to do cement. I usually tell them that, and it typically is going to be women. Once they get into their 80s, I usually tell those folks, like, I may not be able to do this when I get in there. I just have to assess your bone quality once we're in there. And if your bone does seem to be, high enough quality that we can do this, we'll do it. Otherwise, we will use the cement. And folks that have more osteoporotic type bone, the cement works great because there's all these big pores for it to get down into. So it really works well for that. But other than that, I don't really have any patients now that I say, you're absolutely not a candidate for this. You can't do it. It is sort of a during surgery intraoperative assessment that's made. And I think the vast majority of patients are able to have this type of technology. And my practice, I think it's less than 5% of my knees are cemented. I mean, it's probably less than 2%, to be honest. And it's really because I really do believe that the patients do better. I think they ultimately have a better outcome. I think it's a better way of attaching it to the bones. So I think even if you're older, even if you have some mild osteopenia, as long as that prosthesis sticks into the bone when we do the surgery and it has a nice rigid fixation, I think you still get all the same advantages of bony ingrowth, make it last longer, hopefully give people a little bit higher functional scores, pain scores when it's healed because it's a more permanent attachment, avoid the tourniquet use. So I think those advantages are still there. So this is not just something that, only your 45-year-old athlete that blew his knee out and ended up with a knee replacement early is going to get. It is, in my opinion, the vast majority of patients are candidates to get this. And for me, it's just my standard total knee that I do. One thing to add to that that's interesting is in 2014 when I started doing it, Stryker was the only kind of modern company that had a really good progressive design with all these new materials. And that's the reason I went with them. And at the time, I think a lot of, well, probably other surgeons, but also other sales reps of, the company I used previously kind of gave me a hard time. They were kind of like, doc, they did that in the 90s, and I don't think it's going to work out well. You're doing all these patients without cement. What's interesting now is every major orthopedic company, it has become a huge market segment for them. They all now make cementless total knees, and they are widely promoted and marketed to surgeons. And I think in most of their portfolios, it's the fastest growing implant in their total knee market. For all the major companies, DePuy, Smith and Nephew, Zimmer, even the smaller companies. So it's kind of interesting that, it kind of took off like wildfire over the last 10 to 15 years, and now is kind of becoming the standard, I think, for all knee replacements with all companies. These patients with knee replacements, I mean, it is a challenging recovery regardless of how it's done, and they have formal physical therapy. So I typically start patients off with home health physical therapy, and that's just a convenience for the first 2 to 3 weeks when it's difficult for them to get in and out of a car or impossible for them to drive. The therapist will come work with them, and that's typically 3 days a week that they are there in person working with the patient, and then the patient's given home exercises to do in between visits. And that usually, again, lasts for about 3 weeks is probably average. And then almost all patients after that need to go to outpatient physical therapy to continue working on range of motion, strengthening to get the best result. And we know that patients that put in a lot more effort with the physical therapy, strengthen the muscles, work on the range of motion, I mean, they have better outcomes. And regardless of how you fix the knee to the bone, if a patient doesn't participate in the therapy or doesn't work hard, they're not going to have the best outcome. So I think it's very important part of the whole process, but I think it's most critical to do it formally with a therapist, not just on their own. People think they can do it on their own, but it's a whole lot different trying to move your knee on your own or bend it with a rocking chair than having a person actually pushing on it and making it go and keeping track of how much it's moving and knowing, the goals at 2 weeks, 6 weeks to make sure the patient stays on track. Because if they fall off of that path, it can create some permanent problems, permanent stiffness, or things that need other operations to correct. So it's critical.
Is there anything else you would like to add, Dr. Burnett? Well,
No,
thank
I
you so
think
much
I'm
for your
good.
time and sharing all
Yeah, thank you, guys.
your wonderful knowledge.